Hello, this is Bill Powers with MiningStockEducation.com, and with me on the line is Mr. Marino Peterse. He is a strategic metals analyst with decades of experience as both a gold and financial analyst. He's the publisher and editor of Gold Letter International, Uranium Letter International, Strategic Metals and Rare Earths Letter International, and he's a frequent speaker and panelist at major worldwide mining events. His website is metalcommodities-ip.com. Marino, thank you for joining me today.
Okay, you're welcome.
Marino, a sector that's gained a lot of interest from investors at the end of 2016 going into 2017 has been the uranium sector, and that's one of your specialties. One of the reasons why investors are interested in that sector is because it produced so much wealth for those that were able to invest early in the 2000s in the uranium sector before it rose parabolically going into 2007. What can we learn about the uranium bull market from 2000 through 2007 that could help investors in the expected uranium bull market to come?
Well, of course, it was the disaster in Japan on March 11, 2011, which crashed the uranium markets. And, well, you've seen that from levels pre-Fukushima, from, let's say, 67, 75 at the spot price, and long-term price of 73, prices, as I said, crashed to a low of 18 at November 28, 2016. At that time, the long-term price was 33, so that halved, actually. The real problem is that people expected Japan to restart their first reactors within 2 years or so, and now 5 years later, there are only three of these reactors online again. So this is rather disappointing and actually depressed a recovery. We saw, nevertheless, a kind of recovery from November 28, the end of November 2006, to 26 at February 6. So that was the high for this year, actually. So that's just a month ago. And that was, of course, the direct reason why the equity prices skyrocketed, and people became more positive about, let's say, the situation of potential growth led by emerging countries, including China, India, and Russia. Very disappointing, of course, is that we got another correction since then to a current level of, well, 25. Well, it is not, of course, a big correction, but on the other hand, people expected that the price would gradually go up, and actually, we are in a consolidation phase again, which makes it very difficult to give a short-term forecast because there's a lot of information which is not transparent. And in my view, this particularly has to do that we don't know what the store of uranium in the major markets, United States, Russia, and also Japan, of course, are. Japan had enough storage actually to feed 47 reactors before the Fukushima accident, and people don't know what happened since then with the store, and also there's no public numbers on the storage in the United States and in China, so this is a big uncertainty which is the market dealing with nowadays.
And would you say the number one catalyst for a rising uranium price moving forward would be the Japanese restarts?
Yes, it has been right from the beginning, and so that's for sure, because I don't see any other catalyst for the time being other than, let's say, specifically the big companies, the producers and the advanced uranium companies saying, well, this is a temporary correction. And actually, it hasn't shown to be so. This makes the market rather vulnerable at the short term, unless you get some encouraging information that the market as such changes. And I think it would really help when you get more insight on the storage, so on the short-term oversupply of uranium.
The share price, the dramatic share price rise in the equity since November going into February, would you attribute that to just savvy contrarian investors on the sidelines waiting to discern a bottom, which we discerned in November and December of last year, and they flooded into the equities in such a way with such excitement that they got oversold quite quickly?
That is the, you're correct. That's the overall situation as it is to be considered. On the other hand, we have seen, of course, two very exciting discoveries by fission uranium and by NexGen Energy. So that in the meantime caused a lot of speculation in the market, and I think investors, particularly also the professional investors, took the opportunity to write very positive reports on those two companies, which actually had very good results, but they nevertheless are development companies in the early stages, because you may know that it will take 5 or 6 years before you can come to some kind of a production discussion, specifically also taking longer than in the past because of more safety restrictions, actually. And as a result, I think that NexGen, by example, all the attention specifically for North American investors, led by the major investment houses, focused very specifically on NexGen Energy, and you might have noticed that that company currently has a market valuation of more than $1,000 billion, $1 million actually, $1 billion, which is in my view out of reach when you compare that, let's say, to the additional production companies in the United States, and also to what I call the old generation of producers and advanced development companies in Canada.
I noticed in your uranium letter you cover a number of companies in jurisdictions literally all around the world.
Yeah.
Are there any jurisdictions that you favor for uranium companies? And
well, potentially, yes. These jurisdictions are, let's say, in Niger and in Namibia, but these are, of course, African countries, and they have their political, geopolitical problems. And so these companies have been, well, now relatively undervalued compared to the advanced countries, because I'm certainly not that much optimistic about the Western countries, specifically not United States, Canada, and Australia for the time being. Because you see that they really have problems with their production, and they all have negative operational results. They think that they could actually finance that, well, on a term of a couple of years, but, well, you may have noticed that it takes more than 5 years now before the market has shown any signs of recovery, and so they have to finance the operation losses by new private placements, causing dilution in the market capitalization. And again, I mean, they make the calculations on, let's say, a price of $60-$65. They even say, well, there's no impairment cost due to the positive long-term outlook for the uranium price of $60 per pound in the relevant future. And what is a relevant future? Because $60 per pound, that is twice as much as current price levels for the long-term price. And I think this is not a real fair, realistic valuation. And I think that these companies have come to some impairment cost based on this realistic situation as it is.
So how would you advise investors to play the uranium sector over the next, let's say, 3 to 5 years? What would be some tips or advice that you would give?
Well, I'm really looking to special situations. I'm a fundamental fundamental analyst, and I'm the only one actually covering all these companies worldwide. You can see that from my monthly updated overviews of worldwide listed companies. What I'm looking at is when we look at Canada, whole production of Canada comes from the Athabasca Basin. And I publish also a monthly updated overviews on the Athabasca Basin. Next week, a special report on the Athabasca Basin will be published. And then you see that, let's say, there's only five companies with a mature market valuation, which are considered to be, investment-based situations. But with the exemption with UAX, and I'm writing a report on that, all these situations are much overvalued at current uranium prices. And when I look at the Athabasca Basin, I mean the difference between, let's say, the smaller junior companies and the big companies is that big that I say, well, listen, makes sense that when you buy a few of these smaller capitalized companies which have positions in prospective projects. Unfortunately, there's not much money available, but the projects are there, and as such offers potential, speculative potential. And when these companies with market capitalizations of only between 20 and $50 million, when they have the opportunity to fund their ongoing expenditures, I think the leverage potential is that much that it makes sense that, let's say, you diversify in the Athabasca Basin on a few of these smaller companies.
So you would prefer explorers right now at this point over developers and
yes,
producers?
Yes, that is on a selective basis, and that's what I provided in my reports based on, the quality of assets and the prospect of these assets. And a bonus could be that some of these companies have joint ventures actually with the major companies. But you may know that Cameco, by example, is the biggest company in the world, and also they have withdrawn from new exploration by the end of 2016 and for this year. So you need some patience, but this market of smaller junior companies is actually also moving up, and they also in the first couple of months of this year showed very interesting increases, and still with market value of what I mentioned before, from 20 million to 50 million. And when you compare that, let's say, to the big companies of showing, and these are only five companies, market valuations of 400 million up to 1,000 million for next energy, that gives a lot of leverage potential, of course, on a speculative basis, but worthwhile, to invest in smaller amounts, do a diversification on 3-4 of these companies. In addition, to the undervalued advanced exploration company like UAX. They are working together with Areva and with Cameco. So I really favor UAX on, the bigger companies. And said before, I've written a report on it, which will be published next week.
With your expectation of the spot price, over the next 5 years, do you expect it to go... And this may be, this is a speculative question. Do you expect it to go parabolic the way it did in 2007? Or do you have any thoughts or speculation regarding the future of the uranium spot price?
Well, like you say, it is not possible actually to do long-term expectations, because everybody was wrong, including myself, that the spot price would go under $30. When you look at all these reports from major companies and, let's say, specialists in the uranium market like myself, we all thought that there would be a resistance level at 30, around 30, and we went down to 80, 75. Despite there is a relatively small recovery to 25 nowadays, and the market stagnating, I am not very positive, let's say, or not positive at all, and it is not realistic to expect on, let's say, the current available information that the market will double again to the old levels. And this also has to do with competition, actually, from other clean energy sources. So I don't expect, actually, the market to go up in the next few years to these $60 levels.
Let's briefly discuss gold. You're the publisher and editor of the Gold Letter, and I'm reading from your March 2017 letter. You wrote this: "My conclusion is that the gold price will test a new resistance level of $1,300 in the second quarter of 2017, yeah, which will clear the way to my price target of $1,400 to $1,500 by the end of the year." What do you see in terms of gold? When do you see gold touching a new all-time high? What's your forecast for that?
I don't expect gold to show an all-time high, only, let's say, based on geopolitical, international geopolitical issues. So not from a fundamental point of view. And I have to thank President Trump for helping me to realize actually my new resistance level around 1300, because we are now at 1287, as you may know. And I think, well, with what's happening these days with Syria and also North Korea, that it is just a question of days or weeks that that level of 1300 will be reached. And you should know that that is a very important level, because I am looking to the margins of the producers, which also will help the performance of the developed, of the advanced development companies, to get at least a 300 profit margin. And that will help actually the index and the equity, gold equity markets, to go higher. So also on a selective basis again for this year, I am positive for the gold market.
And then what advice would you give investors regarding gold equities over the next few years?
Well, I think we are in a new cycle. That means that first the major producers will show, let's say, will dominate the performance. You might have seen that and the indexes of the EU, the gold indexes went up by almost 100%, and also my portfolio short list of investment recommendations went up by 100%. And I think that, let's say, this trend will actually continue, not, of course, these tremendous advances in the market, but at least, let's say, potential of additional potential for this year in average of 30%. I will pay attention, I haven't done yet, in my short list to, let's say, companies with smaller market cap, let's say below 200 million, so in a range of around 100 million, a little bit less, a little bit more. So these will be my special situations. I'm studying that after having visited the PDAC and a big European gold forum, and I will pay attention to these special situations from, well, this month, actually, in my market letters and also in my list of special situations.
But to clarify, you believe we're in a bull market, but you don't necessarily expect us reaching all-time highs?
No, well, why should it? There's no catalyst for it. And I mean, the situation is that I have been at a big conference in Europe with some American speakers, and they are actually looking for excuses why the market should go up to 2,000 and maybe 3,000 and whatsoever. In my view, that will not happen. They refer to, let's say, negative growth of interest rates, you know, because the interest rates fell down, of course, but inflation actually advanced. So when you have the net inflation rate of the net rate, growth rate is negative. So they expect that to be a positive for gold. But I'm just studying a situation to say, well, it's not true what they are saying. Like it is not true that gold is a monetary instrument. I said that already for the first time 5 years ago. It is not an monetary instrument, let's say, on a global basis. It is for the Western world. But when you look, let's say, on a global basis, you will see that in the Western world, the average is 30% of total reserves is invested in gold, monetary reserves. But when you look at Asia, you see that China has only 2.5% in gold. You will see that Japan has only 3-4% in gold. So gold is not a monetary instrument in the emerging Asian countries, and the reason for that is that they are looking actually for base metals and also for industrial metals which can contribute to their economic growth, and gold is for them a dead metal. And again, you can see actually the figures on that. I'm a fundamental analyst in my publications. So I think that people supported by the media, let's say the investment managers or so, are totally wrong picture in their advantage to what is really happening on the gold market.
Marino, could you please share with the investors that will be listening regarding your newsletters and the services you offer?
Well, I don't have to make a promotion for myself. Just look at my website and you will find out actually what I am doing as a fundamental analyst. And you mentioned already my website, and they can find everything they want to, and they can be in direct contact with me through my website.
Thank you very much, Marino.
You're most welcome.
Thank you for listening to this Mining Stock Education podcast. Please subscribe and share with like-minded investors. Visit us on the web at miningstockeducation.com for more resources on precious metals and natural resource investing. At our website, you can also sign up for our free newsletter for interview transcripts, stock picks, and more. This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be considered personal legal or investment advice or a recommendation to buy or sell securities or any other product. We make every effort to be accurate, but the information presented is not to be considered infallible. It may contain errors, and we offer no inferred or explicit warranty. If personal advice is needed, consult a qualified legal, tax, or investment professional. Do not base any investment decision on the information contained on miningstockeducation.com, our podcasts, or videos. Make sure you always conduct your own thorough due diligence before investing. Realize that we may hold equity positions in or be compensated by some of the companies we feature, and therefore are biased and hold an obvious conflict of interest. For our full disclaimer, please visit our website.